Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday, February 3rd. Time for our weekly Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here by David Griggs and Matt Sikowski, John Salika down below, John Titel and Joby Fortson to his side. So pretty full panel tonight. Shout out to David Dorman. He might be jumping in here. I know we've had some failing problems. This is our best to him.
Not arguments or anything like that. Just some family.
But some got a lot to get to. It was a very exciting weekend in college basketball. And but before we get to any of the games, those of you that missed it, last night we recorded it at one of our bracket rundown shows. You could find it somewhere down there on the website. And during the show, Griggs had some very, very questionable selections on where he was putting teams. Like the fact that he thought Arkansas was safely in the field. He thought that Florida was number 19 overall.
I explained that.
You weren't there and you're laughing at some of these stuff I can see.
And Wisconsin's a 9 seed.
Yeah, Wisconsin has a 9 seed. I think he had Auburn on the 5 line. But anyhow.
The 4 line. I had him as a protected seed.
I thought we'd start out. We do like to do blind resumes this time of year. And I thought we'd start out the show with a blind resume. But I'm going to call this blind resume for, complete morons. So, Griggs, you're up.
What?
blind resumes, Griggs. Left or right? Which team is better?
Well, you have to.
I know who the team on the right is.
you have to. Okay, you have to sort of peel back the onion and look at everything. And one of the things that jumps out about the team on the left is the quad ones. But like when you look at the team on the right, they've won a quad four home game or a road game, whereas the team on the left has not. And I kind of wonder. Quad four wins, those can be damaging to your resume. Is the team on the left afraid to go and play a quad four team on the road? What are they hiding? That's a lot of losses on the right, but one can only assume that they must have played a really, really difficult schedule. Whereas the
team
on
the right
left,
is the second highest non-conference strength of schedule in the country, which is a big reason why they are not the Centenary Award winner. What do you view?
The team on the left, I mean, you can't, if their schedule was so hard, then why is their record so good?
So you go with the team on the right, Griggs, huh?
This is tough, but I think, I mean, they've got the road win.
Obviously, for anybody that hasn't figured it out yet, we got Mississippi Valley State on the right, Auburn on the left. And now we know exactly where Griggs' mind is when he ranks teams.
Well, this is serious stuff,
Chad. One game winning streak, baby.
There you go.
One game winning streak.
I was also going to point out Mississippi Valley State could be in rare territory because they would be our first back-to-back centenary.
I think a road win is a disqualifier from winning the awards.
No one's ever won it when they've won on the road, I don't think.
One road win, but they also have two non-D1 losses. I have to give them a lot of credit for that.
It is true. But those could have been NBA teams. Another reason to favor the team on the right.
Let's please go right to the real games here in the Big 12 Conference. And I already highlighted the game. I mean, it was the game, not only the week, maybe the game of the season so far. And Joby, let me start with you. I know you had thoughts on this Texas Tech-Houston game. I mean, the storylines, the drama, everything in this game.
It was outstanding. I mean, yeah. If you're a college basketball fan and are not aware of the undergoing the most important storyline of this game, shame on you. as a recap, before the under four timeout in the first half, JT Toppin for Texas Tech got why don't we just call it a questionable flagrant two. Sure. That he gets kicked out and he doesn't even leave the court, not because he's protesting, but because he's like, what? and then the coach, McCandless is like, okay, let me, we're all calm. He's very calm about it. He goes, all right, let me pull up the iPad on this thing. And he looks at the replay from the iPad an assistant had. And then goes as Drew, as others have said that I've talked to, he went full Earl Weaver. And understandably so, getting back-to-back tees. He's joining his player off the court. But then Texas Tech against a Houston team, which may have looked down upon early in the year, but by all accounts has now, they are reaching the goals of what that was presented for them at the beginning of the year. They're a national title contender. I, even after this game, still believe that. And Texas Tech on the road without their coach, without their best player, pulls an overtime win. Congratulations, Texas Tech. Outstanding, most impressive win given the circumstances of the year in my book.
I will just throw it out there. The actual official rule does say that if you make contact with the groin of another player, the presumption is it is a flagrant two and you are booted from the game, unless the replay clearly shows it was an accident. In my opinion, I thought the replay clearly showed it was an accident. I think the officials here.
I will say this. I do think Toppin committed a foul because he kicked his leg out. He wasn't kicking his leg out to hit the guy. It's just kind of the natural thing. But if you're a shooter, now he was passing the ball, but if you're a shooter going up for a shot and you kick your leg out, the defender doesn't get called for a foul. You do. And so I get why he might be called for a foul, but a flagrant two is just beyond outrageous. So.
Well, Grant McCaslin seemed to agree with Chad that it was a bad call.
Yeah, he went nuts. But how about the Red Raiders now? Matt, let me bring you in here. When I pull this Red Raiders profile up, not Mississippi Valley State, Texas Tech, we had this team way up there that now, and this is a real darn impressive profile.
Oh, yeah. This is what I think. This is a protected seed profile now because Roadwood's Houston, obviously Houston, the big one. But even BYU, a team I think is in the field right now, in that you win at their place, so two tournament wins away from home. And then beautiful metrics, and that resume metrics catching up a little bit, beautiful predictive metrics. I think, yeah, this is a protected seed.
Yeah. Tytel, he mentioned that BYU team. One of the other big stories in this conference, there's actually a lot of big stories to get to in this Big 12 conference tonight, but was BYU, they picked up a couple of wins. They beat Baylor. They won at UCF. Major change to this profile at this point, isn't there?
Major. New coach Kevin Young lost 4 of 5 to begin January. He has turned things around in a big way. He's won 4 in a row, back-to-back wins over Baylor and UCF. As much as Matt wants to put him in the field today, I would wait 24 hours because there's a huge game on Tuesday. My Wildcats visit Provo in a battle of two of the top 20 efficient offenses in the country. If the Cougars miss the NCAA tourney, it's going to be their own damn fault, frankly. Their non-conference strength of schedule is downright unholy. On a team loaded with mature veterans, these are a bunch of guys who've already gotten married or completed a 2-year religious mission. It seems like even their freshmen have plenty of experience. 6'9 Igor Demon played for Real Madrid last year. The Russian is leading the conference in assist percentage. 6'9 forward Cannon Catchings played for Overtime Elite last year. He might have the best genes of anybody in the college basketball. His aunt Tamika, 10-time WNBA All-Star, 4-time Olympic gold medalist.
Wow. Salika, I mentioned Tytel's Arizona Wildcats. I want to ask you about them here. They're another team that had a really good week. Last Monday with a win over Iowa State, followed that up with another game with an exciting ending at Arizona State.
I didn't get to see all of the game, but it was certainly very eventful considering how the game ended with the coaches having a little bit of a fracas, Bobby Hurley saying, well, I've got to vote for the Big 12, and I probably will not be voting for Caleb Love for the Wildcats, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was great. That was almost over the top of Bobby Hurley pulling his team and his coaches off the floor before the game ended and announcing that because of the way he played, the game went, he's not going to vote for Caleb Love.
Ridiculous? Ridiculous and – somewhat amusing in the sense that everybody likes to laugh at Yosemite Sam. And this is, this guy just sort of went, how would you like to be Brett Yormark this week and dealing with some of the stuff that the coaches and the officials have done? Yeah, over the top. And I'm sure Caleb Love is so crushed to know that Bobby Hurley won't be voting for him. He should have come back and said, like, I don't have a vote for coach of the yeah, for coach of the year either in the conference. But most people won't be voting for him any either.
Joby, let me go back to you and talk a little bit about the Kansas Jayhawks also here. I mean, in the past three games, two of the past three games, they had a 90% chance to win, and they lost both of them, including the game they totally fell apart with over against Baylor. They're playing Iowa State as we record this game, and no matter how much they're up, I expect them to lose the game.
Well, I mean, this is not the Kansas from last year, right? That what I always liked was Kansas, and I'll look at it in terms of the JNG. They seem to always game the JNG pretty well. They are always like, yeah, because one of the things JNG like is racking up a lot of impressive wins. Guess what? They did. They do have a number of really good wins. I mean, come on, Duke has one loss this year, two losses this year, and they're one of them. But they aren't doing their usual thing. Normally, they beat that Baylor team. Normally, you know, they wouldn't have these little hiccups. They're still in line right now for a protected seed in my book, but they've got to run through the tape. And the Big 12, you know, especially at the top, the teams we've discussed, and one we haven't, Houston, Texas Tech, they are right now playing better than Kansas, and right now will be ahead of Kansas, you know, taking away Kansas's birthright of a Big 12 regular season title.
I think the loss, this didn't dawn on me when it happened, but first of all, they had a 19-point lead at halftime and were outscored by 30 in the second half. Secondly, Kansas does not have a true road win against a team that's going in on the first ballot or that's safely inside the bubble. And when you this may have been their last real shot at one. I know they go to
at Houston, yeah.
And like I said, this was their last real shot at one.
I think we want to discuss one other team in this conference. There's a lot of stories in this league this past week, but Matt, I think we got to discuss Iowa State. What the heck happened at home over the weekend to Kansas State where they lose by 19?
This is the old saying is, don't let one loss become two. That terribly unlucky loss against Arizona where Caleb Love hit a 60-footer to take it to OT, and that they then blitzed in the OT, which, hey, that's understandable. What's not understandable is that you go to lose at home by 19 to a Kansas State team that might not make the NIT at this point.
Yeah, Kansas State still sub 500. And Griggs, I know you think they're going to make some incredible run.
I'm not all the way to thinking that they'll make some incredible run. Where I am at is that if they make it a run, it couldn't be anything other than incredible, considering they were 7-11. But they've had a hell of a stretch, you know, to blow Iowa State off of their own floor. It kind of makes you wonder, is anybody else at least sitting up and taking notice? Like, hey, is K-State about to do something historic here?
I'll tell you what, their next games here at Arizona State, Kansas home, Arizona home. Talk to me in about a week and a half.
Okay. Yeah. And that's totally fair because, you know, they're still really bad.
Stalika, upcoming schedule in the Big 12 and a heck of a week ahead. Starting with the game tonight that we're watching right now, Iowa State, Kansas, but we got a lot of other really big ones here.
We also have some extreme oddities in the standings right here. I would like to congratulate Houston and Arizona's MLB teams for being at the top, but don't we have to relegate the Reds and the Rockies at the bottom here?
They're relegated to the Mountain West.
Yeah. Pretty much at this point, but yeah, I mean, I just highlight some of these games. So Arizona at BYU, Baylor's at Texas Tech. Texas Tech is at Arizona. Another huge week for the Tech. Kansas at K-State, the way Griggs's K-State team there. Baylor, Houston next Monday night. Just wow in this conference.
Yeah. But, how about another big one, Chad? From a bubblicious point of view, UCF goes to Baylor, and they need a win like that. Another team, I know we didn't talk about them, but barely losing to Houston, barely losing at Kansas. And I realize that they've had their share of decisive losses as well. But this is a team who's right on the bubble, and well, they just need to finish off a game like that. They need to hold serve against Cincinnati, but I think they really, really need to go to Baylor and win.
They had a little bit of trouble with Kansas at home early in the season. Just a 51 point loss.
Well, they've had their share of decisive losses, and about three or four of them were that night.
Let's go over to the SEC, where a lot of nights we start on the SEC. Tonight we go to it second. Matt, let's start at the top here. The Auburn Tigers. This team continues to roll. They won at LSU. They won at Ole Miss. And here they are, 20-1, with honestly one of the most impressive profiles. If this was the end of the season and that was all their wins, it would be one of the most impressive profiles I've ever seen.
Yeah, and
Oh,
before you
exactly.
go,
Like
yeah,
you
before you go
sprinkled
to
in a little
Matt,
more
motion.
Q3, Q4, maybe a couple more Q2, and even that Q1 alone is one seed quality. Like if it ended, whatever, the rest of the games are Q2 through Q4, or even Q3 through Q4, they'd probably be a number one seed if they kept winning.
And
Like,
how about that? The current status, it is February 3rd, and they are locked. Earliest ever, I believe.
really, sir. I'll tell you what here. On the right-hand side, just to look at this profile. Here, this is what Auburn's profile would look like if they lost the rest of their games. Tytel, that's a team that's solidly in the field on the right there, is it not?
I was pushing for them to get locked in January, and I understand why we wanted to wait. But yes, when all of your opponents are top 50 in the net the rest of the way, as Chad is showing on the right, even if you lose all of them, it's not going to kill you.
They're not gonna. I mean, I still that
They're
volume of quad one
still
wins.
wearing white if
Yeah,
they
I'd
lose
say
the
that'd
rest of their
probably be like a
games.
7 or 8 seed if they lost that.
They might be a four seed still, Matt, honestly, with those wins, unless they get dinged for the losing streak.
Yeah.
But let's take a couple look at a couple other teams here, and well. Griggs, let me ask. Let's talk a little bit about Arkansas.
Okay.
How about Coach Cal's return to Kentucky on Saturday? Gets booed, but he had the last laugh, did he not?
And it's almost as if he had planned it and underperformed all the way up until now, so he could go to Rupp and just rip their hearts out. And now Arkansas may be ready to get serious. But again, not the best theater from the weekend, but way, way, way up the list. Him going there, getting booed. You had Rick Pitino, pleading with Kentucky fans to be classy and give him an ovation. The St. John's coach asking Kentucky fans to treat the Arkansas coach well, further proof that Rick Pitino just can't shut up about things that don't matter and that don't concern him. But that's another story. But yeah, I mean, just what a gratifying moment that had to be for Arkansas and particularly for Coach Cal.
Well, what was Pitino supposed to do? Plead with Calipari to give Kentucky fans a finger?
How about what Tim Miles did? Nothing.
There's a hundred other teams we could talk about. Let's talk about a few of them. Tytel, Texas A&M, a nice 2-0 week, including a win over Oklahoma.
Oops, HD's favorite uncle, Uncle Buzz, had back-to-back losses to Alabama and the aforementioned Kentucky Wildcats in mid-January. Since then, won four of his past five to improve his conference record to 6-3 in the best league in the country. They get the entire week off, and then they head to Mizzou on Saturday. The offense, shall we say, remains a work in progress, but one perk of not making shots, their 16 offensive rebounds per game is number one in the nation. And you might not think their fifth-ranked strength of schedule can get any better, but three of their final five regular season games, Tennessee, Florida, and Auburn, it might get better. And I know,
Wow.
lastly, that some of you out there don't think injuries matter that much. But the fact
No,
is,
they
when they're
do.
starting backcourt of Wade Taylor IV, who was an All-American in 2023, and Zurich Phelps, who transferred from SMU, when they both play, the team is 15-2 in the best league in the country. When at least one of them is out, the team is just 2-3.
Let's talk about maybe there's only one really true bubble team right now in the SEC, and that's the Georgia Bulldogs, Joby. Team
Yeah.
that now you're starting to really question the profile the last few weeks here.
Yeah, I mean, they have that in their last six games, they're 1-5 with a glorious win over South Carolina at home. With South Carolina, not a bubble team. Georgia, when we were talking about the SEC before we got to conference play, we said, you know what? All these teams with great records, great resumes, it's just inevitable that some are going to lose games to other very good teams, and those teams are going to fade out of the tournament. I give you the Georgia Bulldogs. They were in the top half of the field just 3 weeks ago. They were knocking on, you know, they were on a seed list. They would be in the low 20s. But now they are sinking fast, and they have a mark that Griggs will in particular point out, his favorite stat, but it is going to be big. Maybe they did better than Louisville, but Georgia Tech on the road alone is not going to cut it. They have got to win some one of these road games, and probably not South Carolina. They have got to pull. They have put themselves in a difficult position. They slip up in their next few games against LSU, who's, you know, an NIT team, and Mississippi State, who's solidly in the field, but you should win it at home. If they slip up in these games, the margin of error is gone. And I think their overall record in the conference at the end of the day, when you look at what happens, they are going to probably be on the outside looking in. The good news for them is the opportunities to not make that the reality are there for them.
Absolutely. I think a couple of teams we should address here as well. It's Delico, let me go back to you. Tennessee. We had the joke last night. They won. They beat Florida by 20 points, but still lost the aggregate on the two games of the season. But how about these two? How about the two Tennessee Florida games this year? Neither have been even marginally close.
Well, yes, Tennessee loses the aggregate. On the other hand, Tennessee still has a much better out of conference profile when you consider games like the win at Illinois and. Oh, let's go ahead and pull it up. Yeah, you've also beaten Louisville, which is obviously getting a little bit better and better with Saturday notwithstanding. Florida, if I had to look at their best non-conference win, North Carolina, but they may not be a tournament team anymore.
Fair enough. Although I'd throw maybe that makes the Wake Forest win their best non-conference win. I think people got them a little closer to the bubble to North Carolina right now. Tytel, Missouri, here's another team that had a very nice week. And I don't know that anybody really believed in this team heading into conference play, but they got a nice top of the profile suddenly, do they not?
The amazing part of this Missouri Tiger team is they won 8 games last year, and they are killing it this year. Albeit a bit of a home court hero, 15-0. But still, metrics are great. JNG thinks they're a top 5 seed. They've had road wins at Florida, Mississippi State. Very tough schedule the rest of the way. But this team won 8 games last year, and they're, like, looking amazing. I don't know if Dennis Gates is coach of the year material. I'm still leaning Pat Kelsey. He's got to be in the conversation, right?
I would think so. Yeah, I mean – they got a big one coming up against Tennessee, but as far as like they did have the win against Kansas out of conference, there was some evidence of it, but not a whole lot. Even when that happened, I think we all just sort of thought it was partly due to the overcharged rivalry. But those are two monster road wins at Florida and at Mississippi State. I don't know what those two teams' records are combined at home, but that might be half of their losses is to Mizzou.
Well, Mississippi State does have 3 home losses, Matt, but Mississippi State, I put them on the right there. Just the score in that game against Missouri at home, you lose by 27. Problems with Chris Jans's team, or is it just when you just shake off and move on to the Georgia game this week?
Yeah, that's one such a score. You probably just throw that tape away and just say, hey, that wasn't our night. They probably were hitting everything from 3. I will say Missouri was looking really good in those throwback unis, so that might play part of that. Hey, look good, feel good, hit a bunch of 3s. But and that's I'm not too worried about Mississippi State in the fact that I think they'll still make the tournament, but, man, they looked like a protected seed a couple weeks ago and now might be in the 8-9 game.
Yeah, I think we got to move on here. We're going to spend a long time on this conference. We didn't even discuss teams like Alabama and Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, but upcoming schedule. Tomorrow night we have Oklahoma at Auburn. We have Vanderbilt at Florida. We have Kentucky at Ole Miss. Wednesday we have Missouri at Tennessee. Should I keep going here? For the
Arkansas,
weekend,
Texas, an old Southwest Conference rivalry.
Florida, Auburn this week. Tennessee, Missouri. Texas A&M, Missouri. Tennessee, Oklahoma.
That Texas A&M Missouri game is going to be great.
Mississippi State, Georgia, Texas, Vanderbilt. It just, as with every week in this conference, every single game almost is worth circling. Even the ones I didn't circle, there could be storylines in each of those. But like I said, we got to move on here. Let's jump over to the Big Ten Conference. And let's start at the top there. And Tytel, Michigan State loses its first conference game of the season. And it's not to Purdue, it's not to Michigan, it's to USC.
Just unbelievable. The Trojans with new coach Eric Musselman finished January just 12-8. But I think we need to take a little look at the resume before we give up on them. Seven of those eight losses are to top 55 teams. Don't ask me to explain the home loss to Cal in November. I can't even do it. And while they didn't have any top 100 wins in non-conference play, they've beaten Illinois, Nebraska, and Michigan State over the past 3 weeks. They have a legit shot to beat Northwestern on the road on Tuesday because Brooks Barnheiser is out for the year with a foot injury. And this team was built on transfers after leaving the Conference of Champions. Just ask our good friend Rocco Miller at the legendary Portal House. But one of the biggest surprises for me has been freshman guard Wesley Yates II. A bit of a steep learning curve. There was a three-game performance right after Thanksgiving, lost three games, and he shot 0 for 11 combined. He's looked great since January. He scored 19 against Michigan, 19 against UCLA, and 17 points with four steals against the Cornhuskers.
Really good stuff there, John. And you're right. You see the J&G, it has them at 50. That's a metric that predicts what the committee will likely do. So very, very close to the bubble, if not right on it. And playing better now. And you start to look and you see a kind of a stretch minus going to Purdue of not just games they can win, but that they likely will win. Yeah, I mean, at the rate they're going, they've sort of snuck up on us, and they can get into the field.
I think another game, another notable game from this weekend, Joby, just happened late last night when Nebraska went to Oregon
Oh.
and picked up the win. And there's a couple things here. Number one, Oregon heading downhill, but also on the other hand here, Nebraska suddenly, I know our colleague Rocco Miller said they're in right now. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but.
I'm really torn on how to evaluate Nebraska. Nebraska is bad. Remember, they lost six straight games, including the aforementioned USC at home when, yeah, as part of this run. And out of conference, while, hey, nothing wrong with losing to Michigan State and St. Mary's, but you beat nobody. I mean, you beat nobody. And so they were kind of twaddling along, NIT-ish, Then they lose six straight. But yeah, you beat Illinois, and then the big one, you win at Oregon that late night. So right now, I don't know if Nebraska's in because there's other good candidates. Tytel's BYU, for instance, the USC team that did beat this Nebraska team, but they are definitely in the conversation. They've put themselves in the ability to play their way in, and look at their schedule coming up. Their next, they are as good, if not better, and will be than the next five games they have. Their road games, they need to win them. They're against teams who aren't that great in Penn State, Northwestern, and Washington. And while Ohio State and Maryland are clearly in the field right now, Ohio State, Maryland more than Ohio State, the fact is you get them at home. So if Nebraska can reel off five, they're in probably at this point because they will have gotten past that six game losing streak. However, if they only go 3-2 in that group, they're right back to the NIT.
A couple of things about Nebraska. Picking up some nice wins away from home out in the Diamond Head over Christmas. And without those, one of the favorite stats is they would be 6-8 against the top three tiers or 6-10. But one of the things, another thing you got to factor in as opposed to their record when you against the top three tiers is I just don't think the committee will select a team that made one of the worst administrative decisions ever and fired Tim Miles.
Okay, time to move on here. Matt, I've got Oregon up there on the right. They were, and this is now 6 losses on the season for Oregon. Not a horrendous at all. But 4 of those 6 being at home is just one of the weirder things I've ever seen, ever, I think.
A couple. They got drilled by UCLA. That was at UCLA. Illinois just drilled them at Oregon. And that's what I know their profile. Wins and losses looks great, but man, like that they feel like a 7 or 8 seed to me right now. I know their profile is probably much better than that, but they just like on court performance and the predictive match is kind of back in twos. Like they don't look like a 4 or 5 seed.
Yeah,
that's right.
But it was kind of, when we came into the season, we talked about what would these West Coast Big Ten teams and the same with the ACC and the like do on these road trips, and you know, are they going to lose these games on the road trips? They've done decent on pretty good on the road with wins at Ohio State and Penn State.
They've been losing
it's
at
the
home.
Game. It's home games they're having trouble with right now.
Yeah, it's just oftentimes, especially when we're doing under the radar, we'll make the comment that a team is a lot better than what their profile indicates. I don't know how this is possible, but Oregon's not as good as their profile indicates. I don't know how you get the wins to top it out like that. But Matt's right. I think he's absolutely right. They look like a 7 or an 8 seed.
Probably worth a few seconds here, Stalika, to discuss this UCLA team as well. I think that they're up to 5 games in a row now in this winning streak. Is this team where's this team heading? I mean, is this team starting to look pretty good? Is it not?
I think part of the reason UCLA had the 4-game slide was they're getting a little acclimated to having to travel out east. You look at a couple of the losses, for example, at Maryland, at Rutgers, certainly understandable. Which
I'll throw in there that those happened while all the fires were going on in Los Angeles as well. So I think, you know, there was a lot of other things going on with this team too. So
yeah, my guess is I could easily see the Bruins getting up to a 7-game winning streak because I know Michigan State not going to have an easy time with their initial trip to Poly, at least as far as Big Ten play goes. But ask me when the Bruins go to Illinois and Indiana and then later on in the year to Purdue and Northwestern. I mean, if they win games like those, then we can definitely forget that January happened.
Yeah. Upcoming schedule here in the Big Ten, a lot of interesting games, including the Michigan State at UCLA game.
That's a huge one tomorrow.
I don't know that we really need to circle Purdue at Iowa anymore. Iowa just lost. His name just slipped my mind. Their best player.
Owen Freeman.
Freeman, yeah. Thank you. He's done for the season with a hand injury, I believe it was. But we got Oregon at Michigan on Wednesday. Illinois That's with a road trip to Rutgers. Always tough to win there. Maryland at Ohio State. And came to Ohio State. Really needs
Maryland getting really hot all of a sudden.
You also throw in Oregon at Michigan State, Michigan at Indiana. It's actually a pretty good week in this conference. Ohio State, Nebraska Sunday night. Also, Griggs, again,
it's
Ohio State team that has a very bad record against the top 3 quadrants and needs to get some of those wins, 7-9 up there.
Yeah, not so bad against the top 1, but against 2 and 3, that's just.
I do wish more teams would schedule like the Buckeyes did, though, because not many took the chances they did, like Pitt, for example, Texas A&M. I will give the Buckeyes that if they're on the cut line.
Yeah.
I have a little Big East Conference talk, and Tytel, I don't know if you were at the game Tuesday night or not, but the Johnnies went and won at Georgetown. They also beat Providence this week, but they're still in sole possession of first place. I mean, did anybody see that coming?
Absolutely not. This is like generational stuff. And if you look at their losses, Baylor in double OT neutral site, Georgia by 3 neutral site, and Creighton by 1 on the road. Like they're literally like a handful of points away from being undefeated. And it's one thing to say like they are leading the Big East and they've earned it. Liam McNeely is coming back for UConn. So we'll see how they do on Friday when they head to Stores. If they win that, I am all a believer, and I think they're going to win this league. Call me Saturday.
Call me Saturday, all right. Speaking about UConn, Joby, I know we've got a little bit of Matt's thoughts on the last night of the show, so your thoughts on UConn's win at Marquette without Liam McNeely.
It's, you know, it shows that you can't completely count Connecticut out, though Matt, you know, is correct in his statements of Connecticut was due for this. For there was a little bit of a due theory on this. Connecticut's too good, in my opinion, to slog along like they have them. They have, we thought that they had recovered from their three losses early. And most bracketologists, by the time the early Big East season was underway, were saying, well, this Connecticut team, you know, they're not a one seed right now, but they're in the protected seed line, all this stuff. Now they have sunk to an eight seed. But maybe they're somewhere in between that one seed and that eight seed after all, because this is a great win for them. Marquette's still a protected seed. Don't, you know, Matt doesn't have to panic. You know, they're a good team. It was a weird game for Marquette. Connecticut just took advantage of it and took it to them. Legit win by the Huskies, and Connecticut's a solid team.
I'll tell you what, though, if Connecticut turns the ball over, what was it, 25 times in any other game this season, they're not going to win. This was a fluke as well, Matt. Matt, you're shaking your head.
It's havoc, man.
So they turned it over 25 times, and they went from 12 for 19 from three, and they kind of canceled each other out, like both extremes to the good and bad, and somehow it led to the good, and then Marquette couldn't hit a layup or a free throw for the life of them.
But Matt, let me stick with you. The Crane Blue Jays are the other team worth mentioning here. Now up to a 7-game winning streak.
Yeah, they're quietly climbing. They're hitting a little bump in that. Like, it's hard to get above an 8 seed at this point, but they're solidly an 8 seed, which, hey, going to the Big East play, they weren't even in the tournament. So it's a nice climb. Now we'll see. I think, yeah. After at Providence, which might feel like a trap game because they're next three, Marquette, UConn, at St. John's. This is one to where if they can climb further up the ladder, they got to win a few of those. They lose a couple, all of a sudden we might be back on the bubble.
I think the way that they've been playing, they can get the wins that they need to certainly get in the top half of the bracket and maybe move up well past the 8 line.
Upcoming schedule here in the Big East. You mentioned the Marquette-St. John's game coming up. St. John's at UConn, then on Friday, Marquette at Creighton on Saturday, and Sleeka, the big one, Sunday, Xavier Villanova.
Well, the whole week is going to be now or never for the Musketeers. I mean, they got their weekend rest at a good time because they had been leaking oil in the second halves against teams like Marquette, St. John's, UConn, and Creighton. I mean, the game against Georgetown tomorrow, an absolute must win, and you look at the Sunday game that Chad had teased that we'll actually be attending in Philly. This is Xavier's going to be last real chance at a quad one win on the road unless Providence somehow sneaks into the top 75 of the net.
Yeah, anyone that's going to be a Villanova game on Sunday, give us a shout out on Twitter. We'll look you up. John and I are going to be there.
I want to go to that, but you're, I'm still invited. Banned from the arena.
You're not allowed in the state of Pennsylvania anymore, Griggs.
Yeah. Gee, if only I had a better lawyer.
Huh? ACC time, and Joby, let's start with. I was actually going to start with the game that was tonight, though. I know there's a couple things you want to talk about, but I'll start with you tonight. You're Virginia, who's just want to pit and kick the living you know what out of them. And this is a Virginia team that's going nowhere this year, and a Pitt team that had been fading, and maybe they've just faded too far suddenly.
Yeah, I mean Pitt. I mean, now Pitt's 5-6 in a very underwhelming ACC. I mean, that's, you know, that's
horrible.
It's one thing if you're Georgia 3-6 in the AC, in the SEC, but Pitt is now 5-6 in the ACC, and that's not good. Pitt, you know, did well out of conference, and yeah, the focus in this game should be Pitt. They were, I think, before tonight, they were still inside the field, even with the loss this weekend to Wake. I think, but one of the reasons why is because they didn't have that awful loss. You know, you can excuse an at Florida State loss, but Virginia at home, that's just, and it's the way they did it. They looked lackluster. Every loose ball was, Virginia was winning every loose ball. Virginia was protecting the defensive glass for the first time all year. I don't think that's an accident. Capel was very frustrated with his team for good reason. they this and we'll talk about with other teams as well. This year, the ACC is a lot like the WCC in, you know, Gonzaga's role or St. Mary's role, or when BYU is in the WCC, their role. Yes, there's some teams that you can get good marks against, but man, you have to kind of run the table because there's a lot of crud that can ruin your that you can ruin your day, and that's exactly what happened today. I think right now, as of this very moment, Pitt is out, and unfortunately, they got North Carolina on the road coming up, but there just aren't a lot of opportunities to recover from a loss like this. Yeah. They have to go big. Yeah, they have to go remarkable in their final eight to nine games here. They got to go 7-2, 8-1.
Yeah, Matt, maybe the team that takes advantage of Pitt out might be their conference mate here, Wake Forest on the right there. A team that has nothing bad, not much good, but nothing bad.
Right. Well, and they had their tournament win this weekend, and unfortunately Virginia took it away tonight.
Yeah.
But they're still they do have a win over Michigan out of conference. Wake has the exact same, you know, what we just said about Pitt also applies to Wake, also applies to North Carolina and other teams. They got to win this West Coast swing. They could maybe lose once, but then that means they got to beat Duke on the road or something.
Ooh, I think they need them both.
and the problem Wake has is that the schedule was unkind to them on getting to play these other top teams. They're not playing these top teams multiple times except for Duke, and that's a tall order. Yeah, it's not like playing Louisville twice, North Carolina twice, oh, you get them at home, et cetera. No, they got Louisville on the road, and they lost. No shame in that. Yeah. But wouldn't you love to have them in Winston-Salem, where I think Wake probably wins, you know, and thus they get a win against the tournament team? They don't get it. And so Wake, all the pressure's on Wake to not mess up, just like – And the example I give is BYU when they were in the WCC. They couldn't lose on the road to Santa Clara. You just can't do that. And that's where we are with the ACC this year.
I will say the one thing, like, I'm not huge at Wake per se in that, but I will say going for them, 39th in wins above bubble, 36th and 6th in record, and that might help them on. And when you choose teams to make it, those are metrics that play big. Now, their predictive metrics might ensure if they get selected, they're going to Dayton. But the resume metrics, two of the big ones are real strong, at least relative for a bubble team, and that might push them over the line.
Griggs, I pulled up Duke there on the left. Obviously, you know, one of the best teams in the nation. Now, 15-game winning streak, and the Duke-Carolina game was a snoozer on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the least compelling games of the day. It had the feel. I think the final score was 17 or 18, but for much of the game, the margin was more than that. It was, you and I were saying, kind of joking, but only kind of, that this was more like a road bye game than a big intense rivalry or a home bye game. And Duke just clobbered them. And North Carolina, I didn't expect them to. I'm not dogging them because they didn't go to Duke and win. I'm dogging them because they did what essentially a Big South team would do, and they do not look like a tournament team. Where does the J&G have the – I can't
– J&G's right here.
Right on the bubble.
Right on the bubble. Carolina,
45,
They're in the exact same spot that we discussed with Wake and Pitt.
Yeah,
they get a loss, it falls.
We did not select
they're,
them.
They're in right now.
Okay.
They could be out. You don't want to be on the razor's edge in the ACC.
It's a metric. Our committee didn't select them the other night. Tytel, did you have them in? I can't remember.
I think Sunday. They and UCF are fighting for my last team in, but as Joby says, like, if they keep this up, they're going off the bubble quickly.
Yeah.
Well, how about this game coming? This game coming next weekend. North Pitt at North Carolina. I mean, somebody's got to win the game. but all seriousness here, Tytel, one of the team, when you look at this, go back to the standings page here, Duke, Clemson, Louisville, we like the way they're all playing. Wake, we just called a bubble team. What about SMU, kind of in the middle there? Don't really discuss them much either.
17 and nor should we, because you see Tier 1 is pretty absent. But I have a quick question for Joby. 17-5 with 9 games left. They've lost to all the good teams but beaten all the bad teams. So if they lose to Clemson on February 22nd and win the other 8 games, which I think is a legit possibility, and then win one in the ACC tourney before getting blasted by Duke or somebody. Joby, have we ever seen a 26-win ACC team miss the tournament? And if not, is this going to be the year?
No, because they'll have – and I know Griggs wants to see them on the road, but let's face it, you win Pitt, you win West Virginia or you win Wake Forest. You're beating other bubble teams at that point, and so you're at the top of that group at that point, I think. So I think they'd be in and by the way, at Stanford will wind up being – you know, very well could be your tier one win.
Yeah.
But I think they'd be in. But man – they're going to have a low 20s number and miss it. I mean, not many times you see a 24 win ACC team miss it. This is very reminiscent of the Penn State teams that we've seen. And you know what? Their non-conference schedule is reminiscent of those.
Yeah. Penn State teams. And one of the things, a big no-no, we mentioned it that if you play an out-of-conference strength of schedule like that, you better not be on the bubble.
Two other quick notes from the ACC. First of all, a shout out to the Miami Hurricanes. Broke their, was it 20 game ACC losing streak or something like that. Finally got a win beating Notre Dame. Yeah. And also the news tonight out of Florida State that Leonard Hamilton is retiring as of the end of the season. Obviously things not going that great with Florida State this year, but a heck of a career he's had there. Upcoming games in the ACC. Duke, they're going to be at Syracuse in a huge one Saturday, actually at Clemson. So that's probably the game I'm circling the most here.
Yeah, the atmosphere for that alone is just going to be phenomenal.
Keep an eye on Wake's road trip also this week, Stanford and Cal. They really need a 2-0 sweep there. And we mentioned the Pitt-North Carolina game already. North Carolina and Clemson next Monday night also. Joby's favorite conference, the Mountain West now, which has had its top kind of fall apart part a bit almost when New Mexico goes to Utah State and picks up the win. And you know, Griggs, Utah State profile pulled up there on the right, no longer quite as just dominant because they just had so many wins and so few losses, and now there's another blemish here, at least I'd say.
Yeah, and not that New Mexico is a bad team, they're not, but you know, it really topped out good because, like, when you look at St. Mary's and San Diego State, not those are two good teams, and to win both of those is true road games, and to have the bloated record that they did. I mean, I was thinking this was maybe if everything fell into place, they could be on the fringe of a protected seed. I still think they're in the top half of the bracket, but I mean, New Mexico just, you know, pancaked them. Yeah, I mean, I was. You can have two thoughts in your head at the same time. I was very impressed with New Mexico, but kind of disappointed in Utah State at the same time. And if you watch this game, New Mexico did something that was kind of hard to do. They shut the Utah State fans up.
Yeah. New Mexico now, Stalika, especially when you take a look at Tier 1 and 2 combined, it's a nice little profile, is it not?
Yeah, if you look at Tier 1 and 2 overall, you're going to have 8-2, which is – certainly going to be a lot better than a team like Ohio State, for example, where they seem to be getting skewered a bit. The predictives are going to be very bubble-ish, but you look at the resume statistics, it's going to scream about 8 or 9 line right here. You look at some of the upcoming games, they're going to have to go to Boise State and San Diego State, probably going to be their toughest remaining test.
The home game against Utah State also. Let's not forget that one.
That and also a trap game against UNLV. Can't overlook that.
We also got to mention this.
Anchor is that home loss to New Mexico State? I mean, it smells kind of bad. It was an overtime. It is a rather, should we say, heated rivalry. How does a brat – like if you're – guessing the committee, Tytel, like how much is that going to weigh them down? I mean, I know they're not going to ignore it entirely, but are they going to be like, you know what, it was in overtime to a bitter rival?
You cannot ignore a Tier 4 loss, period, I don't think. Although Chad wants to say that the LA wildfire should be a factor in the UCLA resume, so I guess there are some factors out there. But keep in mind, New Mexico State has been cold recently, so if you think that Tier 4 loss is going to come up to tier three eventually, I wouldn't bet the ranch on that.
Yeah.
I pulled up San Diego State there on the right as well. Team that has a pretty nice resume. I think most people have them in the field. I mean, Joby wouldn't have them anywhere near the field, but the rest of us would. And I just got to mention this again. I mentioned it last night. They beat Wyoming by 2 points in one of the craziest games over the weekend. Just quick recap here. They were down 9 with about 2 minutes left. Proceeds go on a 20-0 run to take an 11-point lead with 15 seconds left in the game. Look at that final score, 63-61, and it was actually with 62-61 at one point in with the second and a half left. One of the most amazing 15 seconds of basketball. It took about 30 minutes to play it, but about 15 seconds of basketball.
So depressing. So close to eliminating a Mountain West team. So close.
Yeah, but here's the rest of the Mountain West standing. I don't know, Matt. I don't know if there's a case to be made for a Colorado State or a Boise State at this point. Maybe, you know, talk to me in a few weeks type of thing.
Yeah, I Boise isn't super far off. They got the non-conference wins over Clemson and St. Mary's, so they're not super far off. I think they're not in, probably not the first four out. Maybe in the next four out, and that's somewhere in that range. So, like, they have hope still. Colorado State, they destroyed themselves out of conference to where, even if they won out, man, like, I don't know if I'd see, like, put it this way. They went out to the Mountain West title game. We might have a conversation, but they probably got to do something like that to be in the talks of making it at large.
Here's the upcoming schedule. Maybe the game of circles actually is San Diego State at Colorado State. It's a tough road test for the Aztecs this weekend. And Utah State at Wyoming tomorrow night also. You got a circle, I think.
Yeah, I mean, going on the road to it's never easy to go to the Front Range and win.
real quick, West Coast Conference here. And Salika, Gonzaga goes to St. Mary's. St. Mary's wins the game, and here's the Gales at 10-0, clear possession of first place with a nice little profile.
Well, it's going to be over a two-game lead for the Gales right now, so with that win, that probably is going to put St. Mary's probably around the 7 or 8 line as far as where they currently be. Could probably top out around the 6 or 5 line if they're able to run the table in conference play. They're going to be facing a tough road trip against San Francisco and Oregon State before they get to a road trip to Gonzaga later in the month.
If they get both of those and they're good enough to do it, I think that they're going to climb that seed list. I think, you know, their metrics are going to go way up. They're going to be 8-0 in true road games.
You talk about climbing the seed list. I mean, some of these metrics have been the 5 seed range right now.
Yeah. And they're not a Mountain West team, so the J&G is going to like them.
Look, Joby, what about the Gales? I mean, is this team a 5 seed at the moment, or maybe barely 6?
No. At the moment, they're not a 5 seed. But is the potential there?
Yeah. Yes.
Because West Coast, you know, that Gonzaga win would be really nice. But their overall record puts them in play for it, because when you're sitting at the end of the year with only – let's say they only have 3 losses or 4 with either a loss to Gonzaga or Gonzaga, or maybe a Washington State in the tournament, and win, you know, and or that loss at Gonzaga. If they wind up with only 4 losses, they're on the edge of the protected seeds. But the problem they have is there are a lot of really good protected seed like teams. I mean, yeah, we are talking about, you know, if we were talking about Connecticut earlier, if Connecticut goes on some run in the Big East, they're going to be ahead of them. There's going to be teams like that. The entire SEC all of a sudden, you know, diverges a little bit. Missouri gets a few scalps, like the Tennessee game or something. Well, then Missouri is going to be ahead of them. So I don't know if protected seed is there, but they will climb up. Right now, the J&G has them as 7. I think within a few weeks, they could be a 5.
Tytel, let me go back to the standings here. I know you want to talk about another team that's a little bit lower down, but how about Loyola Marymount?
This is the part of the show where I have to find somebody I haven't talked about yet. And Coach Stan Johnson only won 12 games all of last year. I think he's my dark horse candidate for Coach of the Year in this conference. He's 14-8. He's got a 5-game winning streak in non-conference play and a 5-game winning streak in conference play. Do I think they're going to go into the kennel on Thursday and upset the Zags? Absolutely not. Do I think they have enough bad teams left on their schedule to finish with a winning record? Absolutely yes. And the comeback story of the year, I think, might be Pepperdine transfer Javon Porter. You remember last spring, he was arrested for DWI. His brother Jonte was banned from the NBA for life due to gambling. And his brother Copeman was sentenced to 6 years in prison for a drunk driving crash that killed a woman. Instead of seeing his life fall apart, he got his act together. He's averaging 13 points, 8 boards, and a block a game this season. Bravo.
There we go. Upcoming games, those are the four that I circled, the two St. Mary's games. Big road week for them. Gonzaga, home LMU, road Pacific. As long as your name is not Washington State, you should be able to beat Pacific this year. So,
yeah.
The Tigers' only two conference wins happen to be a sweep of Washington State. Just over the American, Matt, Memphis did what they needed to do. Road win at Tulane, road win at Rice this week. Rice gave them a battle, but they found a way to win the game.
Yeah, so they're not exactly blowing these teams out, but they're winning. That's big for them. Keep them in somewhere in the 4-6 seed range, which they are now. Now, every time they lose, that might not just be a 1-seed line loss. That might be a multiple seed line loss. But keep winning and keep protecting your spot to where you're in good shape now. But there's still, unfortunately, there's only landmines this year in the American, other than North Texas.
A lot of landmines. They only get North Texas once. They already played them. They already beat them. And Salika, North Texas, who we've been talking about just because the gaudiness of the overall record, might be a team that gets near the bubble. Did something unimaginable over the weekend at home against UT San Antonio.
It looked like we were going to be breathing a sigh of relief after they held on for a win at Wichita State, but no excuse for losing to the Roadrunners right here. I don't care if he had an anvil or whatever cartoon objects that Roadrunners typically have. That's not a game that North Texas could afford to drop. And as we speak right now, they're in a tight one with UAB, who is also near the top of the conference standings and a potential spoiler for Memphis.
Oh, yeah. As we record this, they're down a point at halftime at UAB. Titel, Florida Atlantic, they were a story a couple of years ago. Not quite that story this year, though, are they?
Certainly not. New coach John Jacobs got off to a rough start in year number one. He's finally over 500 in conference play. He beat UTSA and South Florida last week. Two areas where they have the greatest room for improvement are free throw shooting. 71% is okay, but 7 of their 10 losses have been by 7 points or less. They got to get a little better and they'll win some of those close games. And the perimeter defense is pathetic. 40% allowed behind the arc, bottom 5 in the nation. And what's weird is I've also been underwhelmed by some of their transfers. So they get Jacksonville State transfer Kiki Tandy. He led Conference USA last year with 18 points a game, scoring under 10 points a game this year. And they got Ken Evans Jr. from Jackson State, the SWAC player of the year. He's scoring under 8 points a game this season. I'm surprised that the guys he brought in haven't scored more.
Upcoming schedule in the conference, I think we definitely circle the two Memphis games. They've got to win these both, Tulsa and Temple at home. It is the revenge game against Temple. They lost that game on the road earlier this year. North Texas at UAB and hosting Tulane.
Yeah, Memphis done a pretty good job of holding serve. I mean, they haven't blown everybody out, but I mean, they've gotten the wins minus that one game at Temple.
Let's go to the under the radar portion of the show. In other words, the Atlantic 10. Joby, let me ask you here. I mean, I guess VCU has the best metrics, but is there any chance that this is a two-bit A-10 at all left now? If their best team would lose
the
conference.
Dayton's the only one out of conference.
Yep.
VCU really hasn't done a whole lot out of conference except lose to Mountain West teams.
They also lost to Seton Hall, which is pathetic, honestly.
Which is even below the Mountain West team.
Dayton has
obviously the Marquette and Connecticut wins. But, you know, they've collected a bunch of junk in conference. And maybe if they went on a remarkable run to the A-10 final,
you know, they would need that win at, they need the sweep of VCU, and, you know, they go to the final and they lose to VCU. Maybe then Dayton might have a shot at that point, but Dayton hasn't shown until this weekend. They actually have a pretty good weekend. Dayton hasn't shown that they actually have the ability to do that and put the committee on notice. But yeah, Dayton's the only one, and it takes Dayton changing the way they've been playing for the last month.
I just want to make this point about VCU. Remember what we were saying about BYU and their out-of-conference schedule being an issue if they were on the bubble? Well, VCU's is worse, and you know they're not going to get any higher than the bubble even if they win out. So that is just a putrid out-of-conference strength of schedule. As for Dayton, they're the best team that sucks this badly that I've ever seen.
Okay, whatever that means. Now, Slika, I've heard a little love lately for George Mason, though. They in fact, got, I think, one of our last under-consideration teams last night. Is there a little bit of something here, especially if they can pick up a winning streak, maybe get a win at VCU or win at St. Louis?
They're slightly better than VCU in that they at least got a couple of wins in the top three tiers that were outside of the conference. The only problem is it's at James Madison, nowhere near as good as last year, and also at home against Tulane, who doing great by American standards, but certainly not by NCAA standards right here. And of course, that loss against Central Michigan, that's going to smell just as bad as a New Mexico State loss does for New Mexico.
I will say this, though. They haven't lost, I don't think, since January 4th. And Tony Skin, a lot of people were wondering, could he coach or could he not? He's done a really good job. Now, I don't know if they get all the way across the line and into the NCAA tournament or inside the bubble, but I kind of like them more than anybody else in the league right now. I know their metrics aren't as good as VCU. I think their team may be.
Fair enough. We'll see how it plays out here. The upcoming schedule, let's pull it up real quick here. Mason this week is at GW and hosting Rhode Island. But big game Friday night, VCU at Dayton. That's probably the one to circle this week.
Yeah.
But on that note, that's all our teams for the night. Let's run to final thoughts. And Tytel, I'm going to start with you.
Joe, we mentioned earlier that South Carolina is not exactly bubblicious this year, but I do want to highlight their star forward, Colin Murray Boyles. So they might not win a single conference game this year, but it's not going to be due to his fault. Sophomore forward made the conference all-freshman team last year with just 10 points and 6 boards a game. He's taken it up considerably this year. 16 points, 9 boards a game, block and a half a game, steal and a half a game. He's leading the best league in the country by shooting 60% from the field. This guy had 22 points against Clemson, 25 against Auburn, double-double against Oklahoma, double-double against Mississippi State, and he's the ultimate example of opposites attract. This is the guy, he's 0-9 in conference play. His girlfriend is Chloe Kitts from the South Carolina women's team. She's played 76 games in college. She's lost one freaking game.
So between them, that's a hell of a record. Matt.
So this is what I'll get first of all. This is a big week for Marquette to wear. All of a sudden now off the two line at St. John's, at Creighton. And I think they're definitely capable of more, but since January 1st, Marquette's only 57th in the Torvik, if you just took it from January 1st on. Now, before the UConn game, they had covered the KenPom spread the last three games. So they were showing signs of positive play before the UConn game happened. But this is a big week to wear even 1 out of 2, and you'll feel solid again that, hey, you'll be a protected seed and still be in the tournament in the race for the Big East all year, because his schedule definitely eases up after these next two.
Okay, good point. Joey.
All right. I know we have friends in Lubbock, and I want to apologize. For the bracket show a few weeks ago, I did put the qualifier. When I rated Texas Tech the lowest of anybody on this panel, it's because you hadn't beaten anybody. I don't like teams that had, especially with a crappy out-of-conference schedule. You did have a crappy out-of-conference schedule. Let's be real, guys. And as Griggs has pointed out over and over again, if you're near the bubble with a bad out-of-conference, you're in trouble. You're not near the bubble. You're near the protected seeds. Sorry, yes, wins against Houston this weekend. Titels, Arizona. You have proven that you can beat tournament teams. BYU's now looking like a tournament, possible tournament win. You, the weakness on your resume has been completely covered up, and Texas Tech is knocking on the door for that protected seed. Now, this is the one little point I want to make off it is, this is the perfect example. Griggs often says on road wins, oh, you can change your resume if you have a weakness, a foundation and a weakness that can be corrected. That's what Texas Tech did. That's what a lot of other teams need to do. Houston did it also, by the way, in the Big 12. That's what a lot of teams can do. But if you're stuck in a conference like the ACC that doesn't give you those opportunities for a Wake Forest, et cetera, you are at a disadvantage. So congratulations to the Red Raiders. Keep up the good work, and I'll continue to be on your bandwagon.
All right, Salika.
On a slightly more serious note, my details for this weekend would not have been as high as they normally would. I was visiting my nephew Sam in the hospital.
Hope you're watching.
Hope he and his significant other are doing well. And on a related note, on one hand, it was nice that the puppet also paid a visit, but it was also rather regrettable that we had to throw him out around, 2 in the afternoon when he kept yelling over the flagrant 2 between Houston and Texas A&M. So sadly, we have now had to ban the puppet from the Grant Medical Center in Columbus.
I yell at the guards in the drunk tank all the time, and they won't ban me from there.
Okay. As we record this, by the way, Kansas almost up 20 points over Iowa State early in the second half. So anyone that's watching this tomorrow could be talking about the Iowa State comeback win. But Greg, you want to finish off the show?
That was actually my final thought. I was going to say, as we're watching this, Kansas is up 18 at home over Iowa State. And by the time that you all see the podcast, Iowa State will have won. That's my final thought.
I'm sorry. I stole your final thought. Sorry about that. No, I'm not actually. But on that note, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. On behalf of David Griggs, Matt Zukowski, John Salika, Joby Fortson, and John Titel, I'm Chad Sherwood. We'll be back Wednesday night with Under the Radar. Sunday after the, I can't call it that word, that term that begins with super. So after the big game that, you know, you may want to eat a bowl of popcorn while you watch. We will be doing a bracket rundown next Monday night of the Hoops HD Report. Talk to you again real soon.